welcome to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I am your host, Burl Love, editor of The Enquirer. With me today, guest hosting, Casey Sloan. How are you, Casey?
I am doing so well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm catching up from sleep that I lost during election night.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad I did not have to cover that one this time. I did my
You know what? It wasn't too bad. You know, most precincts were in reasonably early, but it's always a late night. Mm-hmm. So I thought this week on the podcast, I mean, we have been talking about some heavy stuff, crime, politics. We're going to do something completely different. And now for something completely different, we have our guest this week is Mia Sheridan, a novelist who is on the New York Times bestseller list, who just happens to live in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So she will be our guest. And you have actually read her latest book, The Fix.
I did. It came out in paperback November 1st.
That's got an interesting Casey Sloan story because it got you out of your reading rut.
It did get me out of my reading rut.
As some of our readers might know, because you actually did a review of the book,
yes.
Which kind of gave us the idea to see if Mia would come in and talk to us. So tell us just briefly, kind of recap your review of The Fix.
Oh, there was so much.
We should set it up. It is a kind of like a thriller.
Yes, I would say it's more a thriller mystery than romance, but there are some romance, you know.
Romance threads there. Through it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, over the summer, I am a self-proclaimed avid reader. I say that. Over the summer, it was a struggle for me to get into anything because I just wanted to be outside all the time. But then this came across. David had pitched it to me because Mia has, you know, a lot of followers on TikTok and Instagram.
You're talking about David Weissong, yes, your editor on the trending team.
Yeah, I think
a prolific TikToker in his own right.
Exactly. So I'm like, I've never heard of her, but, you know, I'll give it a shot. I love reading. And then once I started reading it, it's like I genuinely could not put it down. The very first chapter, it's a little traumatic. There's a lot of crime and violence going on in it. But the way she just threads her characters into the storyline, it's honestly amazing. Should I just read the back of the book?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. Yeah, I'm intrigued now.
Okay. Because I don't want to... There's so much going on, and I feel like I could not do a recap justice. So I'm just going to read the back of the book. So it says, 11 years ago, Cammie Cortland's mother and sister died cruelly in a violent home invasion. The trauma and notoriety still linger, but Cammie has managed to build a life in her hometown despite everything she's lost. Then one day it all comes rushing back. A distorted voice on the phone, would you like a do-over? A disturbing video of a room with bars on the window, trapping a young boy inside who looks achingly and possibly familiar. And she has 4 days to find him. With the help of Rex Lowe, an old classmate whose past is tied to hers in crazy more ways than one, Cammie races to uncover everything she can about the boy, where he is, who he is, and why she's the only one who can save him. But as Cammie and Rex unravel one clue after another, the past and present converge in an explosion of secrets they never saw coming and a truth they never could have imagined.
So it's got that, if you could do something again, would you do it?
Yes. And
if life gave you a mulligan,
yeah,
would you take it?
Yeah. And she did.
And she did.
She did.
All right. Well, Casey, I think we are properly set up now. Should we just shift into special guest mode and bring in Mia Sheridan?
I think so.
All right, let's do it. All right, it is special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. As promised, in studio, New York Times bestselling author Mia Sheridan. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Casey's really excited. She has read your book. She begged us to have you. No, no.
I like that. Wait,
we were super excited. We don't really have authors as guests too often. We've done it before. Okay. And I was last week years old when I realized you were from here, which is, and live here and everything like that. So you have a new book out called The Fix, but this is what you're, you've written more than 20, right?
I have, and you know what? I couldn't even give you a number. It's close to 30 at this point.
I think it's more than 28.
Yeah. Plus lots of foreign editions in other countries, so it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, so I just wanted, for our listeners, could you just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your writing background and your latest novel, The Fix?
Yes, my name is Mia Sheridan. I have written close to 30 novels. I started in the romance genre and over the years have gone from strictly romance to romantic suspense. And just in the last couple years, I've been writing romantic thrillers, which are a little bit darker than the romantic suspense, and certainly much darker than the romance. But all of my novels have romance in them. It's my first love. I started reading romance when I was probably far too young. And so that will always be my favorite genre, and I'll always have at least a little bit of romance in my novels, I think. Never say never, but
yeah.
And I live here in Cincinnati with my husband, and we have three children who are off at college and one still at home. And I have fallen in love with the city over the past, 22 years that we've been living here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the basics.
What brought you to Cincinnati?
It's a long and winding story, but I'm actually from California. And so whenever I say that, people, I get one of two reactions. It's either, thank goodness for you that you that you're raising your children here, or why would you leave California for Cincinnati? But I met my husband in San Diego. He was in the Navy out there, and eventually he ended up moving to Michigan, where he got a job at his dad's company, and his sisters lived here, so we ended up moving here when we had our first baby and wanted to be near family, but California real estate was just out of reach. And so we ended up here kind of randomly. You know, if you would have told me when I was in my 20s that I would be living in Cincinnati, I would think like, how would that come to be? But yeah, we love it. I love it.
Yeah. Am I wrong on that saying? Isn't Cincinnati, they call it the San Diego? Isn't that what they call it?
I haven't heard that.
I haven't heard it either, but that doesn't mean it's not true. Yeah. Was your husband a Navy SEAL?
Yeah. Well, he was in Navy SEAL training. He got injured. Okay. So he went through training out there, got injured, got a medical discharge, and was kind of a little bit, you know, flailing. What do I do with my life now? So he took a job with his dad's company and eventually tried out for the police here in Cincinnati when we moved. And he's been a cop now for the last 20 years.
Wow. With CPD?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we could go on a sidebar discussion about everything going on, but we will not.
Well, now you know why a lot of my, you know, police procedural portions of the book are very accurate.
It passes the sniff test, right? You have a built-in consultant.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I asked about the SEALs because the first time I went to San Diego, we just stumbled across them doing their training, coming out of the ocean, standing there holding these heavy rafts above their heads, just, you know, as part of a strength training drill and everything. It's pretty impressive to watch the SEALs training.
It's amazing. I could hear story after story of what they did to them in that training. That's a whole separate topic, but it's
fascinating. So 20 plus years here, you raised your family here. Yeah. You're still raising one, I guess.
Yeah.
So you're a bona fide Cincinnatian, I would say.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
I mean, not that I'm the authority on that, but
pretty much.
I think that's long enough. Yeah.
Yeah. I did look it up, and since Cincinnati is the San Diego of the Midwest.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I wonder why.
I first heard that when I was working at Channel 5 And it just stuck with me because I've never heard that before.
Yeah. But yeah. That is interesting.
Yeah. So what made you fall in love with Cincinnati? You said you've been here for 20 plus years. What made you want to stay?
I mean, it's kind of, I guess, trite to say, but those good old Midwestern values really are appealing to me. Mm-hmm. You know, the school systems have been incredible for our children. We have one, our oldest is in medical school. You know, they have the most amazing friends. We have all the most amazing families that live around us. I love it, you know, it's a city, obviously, but it kind of has a small city feel to it to mm-hmm. me. And maybe that's why they compare it to San Diego, because San Diego's kind of like that too. But there are amazing restaurants. It has a little, yeah. Actually, yeah, I probably, maybe you'll revoke my Cincinnati.
I have to ask.
But yeah, I never have been converted to Skyline, sadly.
Really?
But I did raise four babies who are Skyline fans to the end. So there's that.
That's awesome. So I want to actually talk about your books because you've become sort of a TikTok sensation. You have a large following on Instagram. So what do you think makes readers gravitate toward your romantic suspense, romantic novels?
I like to think that readers like the fact that I make a lot of my stories about overcoming. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just about, you know, the crime that was committed or the love story that is happening in the background or the forefront, but about the fact that a lot of my characters are overcoming something very devastating in a lot of cases. And so, you know, I try to infuse all of my stories with the healing necessary for them to, you know, make it to that really satisfying happily ever after where you feel like these people are okay. I can leave them in a good mm-hmm. place.
I felt that especially with The Fix. I mean, she went through a very traumatic mm-hmm. incident in the very first chapter, first few pages. Mm-hmm. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Kind of came out of nowhere. Where did you draw inspiration?
You know, it's interesting. Actually, I was thinking back on this the other day, and I was remembering when, I guess it's been a couple years now, I visited a friend back east, and we were in the car driving somewhere, and she was reminiscing about this really terribly tragic home invasion that happened in near her town. Mm-hmm. And she was just talking about, you know, how people were still kind of traumatized about that, and that, you know, it had really like rippled out to all the surrounding areas, and everybody knew about it, and everybody was, you know, still keeping up on what happened with that family or the remaining members. And it struck me that, you know, that type of crime in particular is just so horrifying. Mm-hmm. You know, like any crime, obviously, any violent crime is terrible and tragic, but to have it happen in your home, you know, the place that's supposed to be your refuge and your safe place from the world, I think, you know, that must send a shiver down everyone's spine to think about. So that's kind of where like the seed was planted. And mm-hmm. then I started thinking about like, well, what might happen in a similar crime, what would be the background of that? What might have happened to bring that about? Who was involved? And, mm-hmm. and you know, it kind of went from there.
Yeah, I feel like that definitely shows, because how did you even come up with these complex characters? I mean, as I was reading it, I was thinking of Rex and Cammy and like they're meeting up again, and then you brought Cyrus into it. Mm-hmm. And then even more so mm-hmm. with Posey and everyone else, I was just like, how does she keep coming up with all of these complex characters and storylines?
Yeah, actually, it's funny because Posey was not even in my plot when I originally
really?
Started writing it. No, she was a, you know, kind of a mid-writing addition. And I loved writing her character. Mm-hmm. She was just like, I had so much fun with her. And I'd love to, you know, maybe do something in the future. I'm not sure about that.
A sequel?
Yeah, maybe, or maybe, yeah, just a little, you know, bring her into another plot in some small way, just as a catch up with her.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this one, I actually started writing without having a real ending. And that is not ideal for me. I don't enjoy doing that at all. It kind of like, you know, I write in this anxious way where I'm like, you know, every day I'm trying to come up with it as I'm writing the middle. And so I wrote the entire ending and turned it in to Montlake, and I just didn't like it. Mm-hmm. I knew it wasn't right. It felt wrong. It felt like I had thrown it together haphazardly, because I had, basically. and so I did what every author hates to do. I scrapped 20,000 words when I got it back and rewrote the ending completely. And was much happier with it afterwards. So
yeah, it's a very good ending.
Thank you.
Did you find some characters easier to write than others?
I usually find my heroines easier to write, maybe just for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of maybe put myself in that role and imagine what I would do under those circumstances, or what I would hope to do rather, you know, under those circumstances. But I really did love writing Cyrus too. He was a fun one to write, and so sweet and all that. So yeah.
And now, kind of going off of that, do you see yourself in any of the characters in the fix?
I mean, I like to think that the characters, like the heroine, if I see myself in her, it's like an idealized version, yeah. And certainly I hope never to find out how I would react in a circumstance like that.
Absolutely.
So, but yes, I definitely write my heroines in a way that I hope that I could manage to rise to that level of courage if I had to.
Mm-hmm. And then, to me, the overarching theme or the goal in the fix that I took away from it is that the main character, Cammy, is tasked with the do-over, obviously. Do you have sort of like your own do-over or a moment that you would like to go back to? Not traumatizing like hers, but in general.
I was joking, actually, the other day. I was saying that I grew up in an era where we didn't have, you know, cell phones or cameras on all the time. So I'm like, I have no regrets. I've never done anything that, you know.
There's no proof anyway.
Prove it. Yeah, exactly. You know, I think all of my regretful moments, and it's hard to say that because now I'm like happy where my life has ended up, but mm-hmm. are all relationship things, you know, just dumb moves I made or taking people back when it was so crystal clear that I shouldn't have, or just, you know, things like that. You wake up at 2 a.m, you're like, oh, no.
Cringing at yourself. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, maybe I'd take those back and do those over and say what I should have said and be stronger than I was. But, you know, all those things, too,
mm-hmm.
worked out because here I am.
The choices you made would have happened.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
When I was thinking about that, reading the summary of the book, I thought, no, there's about 5 or 6 different things. I can't pick one do-over. But then I got like this kind of like a bit of anxiety about, well, if I did do that do-over, then my life would mm-hmm. be totally different.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like it's the time, space, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it's called, that, you know, one.
The
one,
butterfly effect.
Yeah, one small change.
And that's what
change.
I put in my review. Because
yeah.
Honestly, I mean, if she wouldn't have done one thing, would mm-hmm. this incident happen, you know?
But what an exciting right. thing to explore
yeah.
in the novel.
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, it is. It's interesting and kind of frightening and, you know, a lot of different things. But I actually, the butterfly they put on the cover, obviously because of her business, but it relates to that as well. So that's interesting. I didn't even think about that, really.
That's so validating
yeah,
for me.
Yeah, that's so cool.
That was my goal, Casey. So I have some just kind of general, like, because I'm curious, I'm probably envious of people who are successful writers, right? I mean, we write a lot, right? Mm-hmm. But we don't sell novels. It's different, but it's not different in some ways. My first question is, the moment you became Mia Sheridan, comma, New York Times bestselling author, how did you celebrate?
Actually, the first list I made was USA Today, and I did not celebrate. I dove under my covers in absolute just like horror and shock. And I'll tell you why. This is an interesting story, and you'll see how a lot of success is just complete luck and timing for mm-hmm. sure. So I experienced a very traumatic event back in 2012. We lost our fifth baby, a little mm-hmm. girl named Darcy Rose. And in the aftermath of that, I started a blog just kind of to keep family and friends updated on what was going on and what happened and all of that. And people kept saying, oh, you should write a book, you should write a book. And I wasn't, you know, ready for that at that point or on that subject at least. But I was reading a lot of romance novels. You know, they were really helping me. They're filled with happiness and love and, you know, nothing that was going to jump out and be upsetting to me during that mm-hmm. that phase of life. And so I thought, well, maybe I could, you know, try my hand at this. And my husband, I think in the effort just to help me heal in any way he could, he said, you go down, write that book, and I'll watch the kids. And so, you know, it kind of started out as a way, not just therapy for myself, but also like a little break, you know? And so I did. I wrote a book, and this was the timing of a lot of self-publishing was happening. It was like the wild, wild west out there. People just throwing their book up on Amazon.
Are you just talking about your first book right
now? My first book, okay. Yes. You know, and I did that. I figured out how to format it and made a cover and stuck it up there. And like a week later, my husband said, oh, like if I go to Amazon, your book will be up there. And I said, yeah, like I put it up there, you know, thinking he and maybe a couple neighbors might read it. And, you know, really didn't tell very many people. And I was out back weeding or something, and he opened the door and he said, hey, you know, you have a few hundred reviews, and one of them says it was a 1-star, and it said, I can't believe this terrible, horrible, embarrassing book made USA Today. Something along those lines. Maybe that, I don't remember the, but that was the gist of it, basically.
And that's how you found out you run the USA Today
list? That's how I found out. And so it felt like, because I hadn't expected strangers to read it, really.
Yeah.
And so it felt like I just found out that the town full of, you know, my neighbors and friends had read my diary, basically. That's what it felt like, because it was so unexpected. And so I like ran in the house and like jumped under the covers and sobbed, basically.
Oh, this was no.
Like, yeah. And clearly,
I did not mean to take it to that. I thought maybe you opened a bottle of champagne or something.
But, no. But eventually I did, you know, and Kevin read me a few good reviews that initial response was overwhelming and shocking and, you know, unexpected. So eventually from there, I opened champagne when I listed, but that first time was very different.
Are you still affected by negative reviews?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't read my reviews anymore. I did in the beginning, and I kind of got the gist of what people like about my writing and what people hate about my writing. And now, you know, reading a bad review just wounds me. Or it goes through, you know, my head. And I was telling this story the other day, but, you know, on Amazon, they have like a little blurb about the reviews. It's the AI mm-hmm. and you can kind of get them all summed up. Mm-hmm. And I was grabbing something. I never read my reviews, but I scrolled down. And I thought, oh, that's just the AI thing. You know, that won't hurt to read it. And it said, you know, whatever it said, with some readers finding the story ridiculous and embarrassing. And so I quickly scrolled away, obviously, but every once in a while now, if I sit down to write, literally ridiculous and embarrassing will like scroll through my head. And which is funny. It's funny because like, how can you be ridiculous and embarrassing? I'm not sure. Like I might have like actually, you know, done something not many people can do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm laughing. I tell this like in jest. It's kind of funny now. And the robot, you know, came for me. But it just goes to show, though, like words as a creative person stick in your head,
yes,
and
absolutely.
They can, you know, they can be background noise sometimes. And so, yeah, I avoid that at all cost.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a process or a discipline when you write? Is it like clocking in at a certain time of the day, or do you have to be kind of inspired? Does the muse have to like grab you for you to start writing? How's your process?
Yeah, I would never write if that was the case. I definitely have to be very organized about my writing time. I usually write in the morning, just my brain is freshest mm-hmm. then. And I usually write for about 3 hours or so. That's about as much as I can handle, you know, creatively outpouring that all of that necessary emotion and thought and different things. And then I'm pretty much done for the day. I don't tend to write until I can't write anymore. I write mm-hmm. my specific number of words that I've, you know, set for that day.
What is your writing setup like? Do you listen to music to start drawing the inspiration?
I can't listen to music because the mm-hmm. The lyrics mm-hmm. interrupt me. But I listen to rain, the sound. Have you ever listened to that, yeah. like going to sleep? Mm-hmm. I'll listen to rain. So if like rain, if you're like, why is it always raining in her books? It like never stops raining. It's like, you know, the flood is about to happen. Yeah, that's because, yeah, that's the background noise of my everyday mm-hmm. reading.
What do you read?
Well, I try to read out of the genre I'm currently writing in. So if I'm, like, when I was writing the fic, I was probably reading, you know, sweet romance, just because it messes with me and I start rethinking my plots and stuff if I'm, or comparing or any number of things that don't help me. But I've always been a huge, huge Stephen King fan. I love him. He seems to always, you know, do the trick if I'm mm-hmm. in a rut or need something different. I love romance, of course. It was my first love. And the first genre I picked out from the library when I was, you know, I won't even say how young I was because nobody would be concerned.
I think I relate. It was Nicholas Sparks for me.
Okay.
Nicholas Sparks.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. I'm way older than you, but I think I started reading, you won't even know this, V.C. Andrews. She wrote Flowers in the Attic. Have you ever heard of that?
Mm, no.
Oh, my goodness. Very disturbing. And
I'll add it
yeah,
to
you'll have to. Mm-hmm. Very, very disturbing content there for a 14-year-old, but I was hooked, definitely.
So you told us the story of writing your first book. I'm guessing you didn't really grow up thinking you were going to be a novelist, or did you?
No, I never imagined. In fact, whenever I would read a book, I would kind of hold it and think, how is this even accomplished? I can't even imagine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So again, if somebody would have told me I was living in Cincinnati as a writer, I would have thought they had the wrong person. You know, how in the world would that ever occur? So life is just wild that way, you know?
What did you envision yourself doing? Did you have anything in mind?
Well, I was a graphic designer before I started writing, which was helpful in that I was able to do my covers mm-hmm. and, you know, different things like that. But when I was a kid, I wanted to be a magician.
You don't hear that
weird.
Very often.
I know.
I don't even understand what.
Can you do some
I was
tricks?
Thinking.
I know.
I could. I used to be able to. I'm way too rusty to even attempt at this stage. But one of my sons is big into card tricks, so I like to think I kind of handed off that love of magic to
yes.
him.
I had a coworker who was a very accomplished. He was a graphic designer at USA Today. When I worked there, and he was also a very talented musician, would perform, and, you know, I'm doodling right now, he would always have cards in his hands, just working on the moves, just, mm-hmm. you know, keeping those, mm-hmm. getting the muscle memory down,
mm-hmm.
and he said, you just have to do that to be mm-hmm. that fluid with it, so.
Oh, I'll let Cade know that.
You are the now the second graphic artist magician that I've met. Now, my friend
crazy.
Jeff can't add novelist to the end
right.
of his, but
right.
That's fascinating. So I'm going to treat myself as the guinea pig here, okay?
Okay.
So like what I'm guessing there'll be maybe one or two of our listeners who haven't read anything that you've written.
Mm-hmm.
What do you recommend of all the books you read? Like, what is the best book to start with?
Well, it's hard to pick one because the genres are so different.
Okay.
So I always kind of ask people, do you like romance? And if they, oh, no, I never read romance, then I would probably recommend Well, I'll recommend Where the Blame Lies for people who aren't big on romance because it's set here in Cincinnati. That one, and then the follow-up, Where the Truth Lives. And that book will actually be on bookstore shelves this summer. So, and then for people, for big romance fans, my most popular is Archer's Voice. That's probably, you know, the TikTok sensation. God bless those book talkers.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you're looking for a recommendation in either one of my genres, those two, and then if you like kind of a mix of romance and suspense, I would say Unwanted, which is a takeoff on Tarzan.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
And you said Where the Blame Lies is set in Cincinnati?
It is, yes.
Well, that's fun.
And it's a police procedural, too. So I have all the, you know,
inside scoop.
My city, my husband's career in there.
All right, I'm going to read that one. That's going to be my first Mia Sheridan book.
Okay, and if you don't like romance, you just,
then
you
I'm
just
gonna write
skip
a,
right.
I'm going to write a really nasty review.
No. In for AI to read it all. Yeah.
No, I won't do that.
Ridiculous and boring.
I do want to share something funny because when I put that I was reviewing the fix, one of my coworkers, the other Trinity News reporter, Hadiza, she was like, Mia Sheridan, why does that name sound so familiar? And she's like, oh my gosh, I read her romance novels in high school.
Oh,
and I was like,
gosh,
did you really? Yeah, and
oh,
she's from West Virginia. So
oh, how funny.
I'm surprised she didn't horn her way into the studio here today.
I know. I don't even know if she's in
oh,
the office
so
today.
Oh, that's so sweet.
That's great.
I know.
That's
it's
really
crazy.
Sweet. Yes, tell her thank you.
Absolutely, I will.
All right, as cliche as this sounds as we wrap up here, I'm sure there are some listeners who are like frustrated novelists. They have a book in them coming, you know, that just needs to come out. Do you have any advice for someone who wants to get started?
I think
as a writer,
my best advice is write what you love. You know, like write the type of book that you would love to read. Don't worry about what's happening in the market or, you know, what seems to be selling right now or what's most popular. Because you will write best in the genre and style that you long to read. And then do it in a way that, you know, only you can. Bring those qualities that only you have and start there.
All right. Well, Mia Sheridan, thank you for being on our podcast today.
Thank you.
Again, the new release is The Fix, which if you want to read a review with not too many spoilers...
Yep.
From our very own Casey Sloan. That's on Cincinnati.com. And like I said, I'm going to read. I promise you I'm going to do this because I need to get out of my history era that
know.
I'm lost in right
me
now.
This pulled me out of my reading slump. So
I read that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
maybe
I'll do the same
so nice
for you.
To hear.
All right. Well, again, thank you for coming to the podcast.
Yeah, thank
Wish
you, for
you all the
me.
Best. And look forward to that next book, too.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Well, Casey, I have to ask, most times when, like, we read books, we don't have the opportunity to meet the author. Mm-hmm. What was that like for you?
It was actually pretty amazing. I haven't met any authors. I mean, Emily Henry was on the podcast, and it'd be really cool to meet her. I reviewed her book, didn't get a chance to meet her. But Mia was...
You're not bitter about that, are you?
No, not
okay.
at all. Not at all. Mia was everything you could imagine and more. I mean, she was great. And meeting her was amazing. And just hearing her writing process and how she came up with the story in general, it was really great to hear.
Well, I'm glad you asked her the skyline question.
Me too. I don't know for our listeners, though, if it was a great thing because she doesn't like it.
I think, you know, hardcore,
Cincinnatians.
Grew up here. Eating chili people, they understand it. It's because it's sort of still polarizing. You either love it or you don't, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very often, you don't often hear people say, yeah, I mean, I eat it. It's okay. It's like, oh, I love it. Or, yeah, I don't get it.
This is true.
Yeah. I finally tried the chicken chili.
Did you like it?
It was good, but I don't think I would order it. I think I'm a traditionalist.
Yeah. Did you see our video of us dipping stuff into it?
I mean, you guys are getting a little crazy with this
dip. It hurt my stomach.
If our listeners haven't seen the Enquirer TikTok, the things that have been dipped in chili and eaten by
questionable.
Have you heard much from your boss away on paternity leave?
Oh yes, he still sends me story ideas. I'm like, go back, just get off your phone. Come on.
Well, he's still cranking out the TikToks. I feel like
I
I know his family now and the new baby. I haven't met
She's so cute.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, all right, let's wrap this up. Again, if you want to read Casey's review of The Fix, that's on Cincinnati.com. And if you want to check out a Mia Sheridan book like I am going to that's set in Cincinnati, that book is called Where the Blame Lies. That's going to be my next book. I'm all in.
Yeah, yep. There's two. There's one that follows it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
This might be a big commitment for me. Well, should we wrap things up?
Yes.
Let's do it. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating, share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com, click on the subscribe button, and you will find a special offer for new subscribers.
Thanks again. See you next week.